curious. No intro music? That's weird. Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Direction for True show with Richard Talk to Me Guy and Sherry Edwards returns. Good evening.
Hi, Richard. It's good to hear from you. You sound wonderful. Your voice sounds clear. I don't hear any hacky cough. This is awesome.
Thank you. I'll have the vision that you're having. I'm not quite there, but yeah, in this moment, I'm good. Thank you. I'm still a little hacky.
Thank you all for being here. This is going to be kind of an odd show, one that we needed to do because of all the questions that are coming in. So we're going to be talking about bioacoustics, vocal profiling, in the beginning and up until now. This is going to be made into a little movie kind of thing and a book. So Richard's been with, how long have we been together? 5, 10 years?
Just seems like 10 years, but I think it's 5-ish. I think now we have 570 shows or close to that. And I was off for a year when I was away. For those who don't know, I was in a healthcare facility post surgical. So that long, a long time. Especially online, especially on podcasting, that's a long time.
And we were on Rumor Mill News for about a year, even before that, weren't we?
Yeah. Yep.
So, long, long time. So, we appreciate all of you sticking with us and bringing in new people. We are being sponsored today on Direction for Truth by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health, one of the largest research institutes for alternative health in Ohio that we know of. The other people who are coming up will be talking about that, and they are taking up our stuff and then becoming very large research centers. So we're happy that that's happening and people are sharing, but we really wish they would give credit where credit's due. So that's one of the reasons that we're doing this show in the beginning here. We are simultaneously broadcasting tonight with WebEx, so you'll get to see some pictures that we're trying to explain to everybody. It's going to be changed around a little bit, but I think the staff did a great, what do you call this, a poster, a advertisement?
An advertisement.
Flyer?
I know, that's old school. Sorry. An ad. Yeah.
I love these pictures that they put up here. So we'll be doing that and have lots of visuals and... Richard is over there in California, and I hope all the fires and smoke and everything is cleared out. So we'll be talking to him, and he'll be putting this up as an audio shortly after the show. People are asking questions already. That is awesome. We have asked that people who have pertinent questions about how all of this got started from the beginning. So just put those in chat for those of you who are on WebEx with us.
And for those of you that are with us at Blog Talk Radio, I have a chat going over there as well. Already people in here typing away. So if you have any questions as we go along, type them into Blog Talk Radio, and I'll port them over to Sherry.
Okay, and we usually save the beginning of the show to talk about things that are important to both Richard and I. I'm all the time on my soapbox about freedom and health, and he's on his soapbox about environmental things and Mother Earth. So you have a couple of announcements. I'm putting one up right now.
Okay.
FCC relaxes media ownership rules in contentious vote. So
mine is slightly out of the... Yeah, for... for my, usually I am talking about health and environment related issues. In this case, this has to do with freedom and rights and that bailiwick of what's happening in the world of the FCC. To start with, we have now Trump placed a former attorney for Yahoo as the chairman of the FCC. And going into it, he had already talked about wanting to reduce restrictions and free up corporations, basically. That's not what his words are. But really, it's about giving corporations the rights to do whatever they want. And this is one of the things that they've done, is moving toward more of a monolithic idea of press or publications or news. This contentious vote had to do with allowing more individual corporations to own more of the media. I think this is about Sinclair acquiring possibly Time Warner. I can't remember the complete article, but it's more about the act that they're doing rather than the... Yeah, it is about allowing Sinclair to merge with the Tribune Media. So that means Sinclair will now own but yet another media arm. And the FCC previously, until Ajit Pai and Trump, had rules saying, no, you can't own more of that. You can own a bunch, but you can't own more, because then there's no distribution, and you have one tube feeding information to all those distribution channels. Well, now, with this ruling, they're allowing Sinclair to own this media arm. And so really what they're doing in the FCC is giving corporations more rights. They're reducing our information down to how many ever they decide. For all we know, we could have, you know, they could allow one corporation to own everything. We have no idea what the direction they're going, but this is not a good direction. And this leads to my second story, if you'll put that up about
the
FCC.
I have a question.
Go ahead. Sure.
What is net neutrality? Am I just really behind the times? I don't understand that term.
No, go ahead. If you put up that second question, that's what this is, leads into, is net neutrality, or the second thing I sent you on Skype.
And I don't understand. If Trump is doing all this Twitter stuff and he wants to have freedom for himself, I don't understand why he'd want to take freedom away from the people.
Because there's corporate money to be made, and that's really, in my opinion, the direction of his administration is everything pro-corporation, everything pro-the rich, and the, you know, poor people are going to pay more taxes, and the poor people are not going to have access to maybe internet connectivity because an ISP, internet service provider, can choose not to supply it because they might have to give it away at a, you know, lower cost, or they might have to... Well, let me go back to your question about net neutrality. Net neutrality has to do with the current laws as they exist, saying that all bits are equal, meaning, for instance, this show takes a certain amount of bandwidth to go out into the world. And if in my area and in much of California, Comcast is the primary provider of internet connectivity. There are others, but there's not really good competition because competition is a separate thing. But let's say Comcast decides that they have a football game that the NFL, I'm making this all up, let's say the NFL is willing to pay Comcast, or Comcast is somehow making a profit center off of them, and they decide therefore that fee, that NFL game, is more important and deserves more bandwidth than the bandwidth to play this show. And if they so choose, currently they cannot choose that. That's what neutrality is. That means the NFL game is, the bits that it takes to get out to the world are equal to the bits that it takes to get this show out to the game, to the world. Now, with Ajit Pai and Trump wanting to stop that, they want to cancel, they want to take away net neutrality. That means then that if Comcast chooses to broadcast the NFL game with the pipe fully cranked up of the internet and turn our pipe way down because it's not as important to them, they can choose to do that. That's the taking away of net neutrality. Currently, as it is, part of this came about number of years ago when one of the cable providers decided to turn down the pipe on Netflix. Netflix sued. They now pay a fee to come to all cable providers so as to correct that. But it was done illegally. You can't just turn down the pipe now. After this happens, an ISP could choose to say, here's the package you can get from us, and it doesn't include some of the channels that don't pay us. Those are my words. So there is no longer net neutrality. That's what they're trying to take away, is neutrality, saying, well, let's just let the commerce, you know, handle it. Let's let them make rule and order. But the trick there is, it's a lie, in the sense that whatever commerce then decides, if they decide to double our cable bill and we don't have an alternative plan, that's it. There's no plan B without net neutrality. The bits are no longer able to go out. Go ahead.
Can't we somehow set up our own net? And I see a precursor to this. If they're going to do this to companies, next week they're going to say, well, Richard, you're not as important as Joe Schmo, so Richard, you can't be on. And we like Joe Schmo's politics, so we're going to let him on. Is that a
potential?
Yes,
that could happen. Yeah, oh yeah, that's definitely a potential. Let's say let's say Alex Jones has a big enough follow that the cable companies want to make sure his feed gets out there and put it out there at the highest speed available. And then they decide that our feed is not as valuable, so they can turn the feed or the speed that it can go out to the world way down, so it takes a lot longer to get to our show than it does, or to hear our show than it does to hear Alex Jones. If this happens, that they take away net neutrality, that could happen. They would have the right, the ISP, Internet Service Providers, would have the right to do that. Yes, you could say that somebody independent could come in and do that, but the odds of that are incredibly slim, because it costs a boatload of money to run cables. Because one of the things they also want to do is, as the cable, the old school pick up the desk phone copper wires channels are going away, and a number of providers go out and cut those wires because they don't want them as an alternative. So there will be no longer any. Those copper wires were laid down by the phone companies decades ago, many decades ago. And those are still used for other things besides phone. They're used for DSL. They're used for alternate slower speeds, but they're available to people. Well, those are going away. So pretty soon there will only be privatized, individually owned pipes to your home to get internet. And if net neutrality goes away, they can control the flow of that pipe to your home and control what comes to you at what speed they choose to send it to you. No net neutrality.
When you bring up things, yes, when you bring up things like this, I usually ask, and what can we do about it? But in this case, it doesn't look like there's much that we as a group can do about it, and that leads me into something else, except to pull a lot of money together and make our own internet.
What we could do is we could stop reading Facebook for 5 minutes every day and call our congressman and say, I don't want this to happen. If this happens, you won't be in office next time. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward. We don't want it to happen. This isn't actually being voted on until December 14th. That's why I'm really pushing on it. I pushed on it on Sunday's show as well. So we have the opportunity. That's really what we can do. Yes, we could do petitions. Yes, we could do a bunch of things. Calling your congressman every day, because they have to log those calls. They have to accurately document those calls. Those will be a matter of record. That can't be messed with. Polls, petitions, other things we're not quite clear about. So that's what I suggest to everybody, is call your congressman, you know, get an app. There's an app for my phone, for the Android world. There's an app for the iOS world, the Apple phone, that'll just show you what your congressman is voting on. You can tap on it. You can call them right then. You know, that's what I would do, is I would suggest everybody call their congressman and say, I don't want net neutrality to go away.
Why don't we all do it at the same time, between one and two, whatever
sure.
your time zone.
Yeah.
And that
absolutely
would make it extra heavy.
Yeah.
I put both of the links that you mentioned in the chat for the people that are on video.
Yeah.
This leads me into people thinking that if they got together, they'd have more clout. Remember, we've been talking about vaccines and what's happening in Australia, and we had Helen Lobato on about mandated, and part of Obamacare is mandated vaccines for everyone. Now, 50 employees of Essentia Health got fired all at once for refusing flu vaccine. Even the pregnant people that had proof in their hands showing that flu vaccines are likely to abort a fetus. So they refused. Health company fires 69 employees. 50-plus employees. So how long can this go on? 50 out of a hospital? Who are we really hurting? The people in the hospital? The people paying the bills for the hospital? It's going to have to be more than just 50 at a time. It's going to have to be a lot of us. George posts, like the satellite network Hagman and Hagman show. Well, I don't know what that means, George, but we could buy our own satellite time, and people with satellite receivers could listen at whatever speed we pay for. That's a nice idea. Richard, let's commit to finding somebody that knows a lot about this and how we could help people get in touch with their congressman about these mandated flus. Because if you follow Sherry Tenpenny, who we've had on the show, and we've given out her address, just Tenpenny, T-E-N-P-E-N-N-Y, Sherry, S-H-E-R-I. There are so many people getting ill from this and their immune systems becoming suppressed. If I'm not a paranoid person, I don't think, and I don't want to be a paranoid person, but when you start looking at what's going on with vaccines, and how it is affecting the population, it certainly looks like the great culling that some people are talking about. A good way to get humans not to reproduce, and if they do reproduce, they'll be spindly and unhealthy. And that's why we do our courses about people who control health control your quality of life. And that's why we want it to be you, and that's why we are putting these courses together for free, two-day courses with software for people so that we can help you set up some kind of bioacoustic community in your area so that if you are forced into these vaccinations, we can immediately help you back that out and not be a detriment to your body. Any more announcements, Richard?
No. I'll pause. Thank you.
Okay, we are going to talk about in the beginning and how bioacoustics really got started, because we feel like there's a lot of these great big corporations that are trying to take over bioacoustics. And it's the same stuff with net neutrality and health, that if we can get this to the people and everybody has access to it, then big corporations cannot control it. And one of the things that we have done mistakenly along the way is we created a service of the education, and we made a way to get that to the public, whether we're giving it to you for free or you're helping us out a bit by paying for some of the courses and help us pay the rent and the employees. We forgot to create a market in the middle that says, you need this stuff. This is important stuff. And that's what the Mayo Clinic and MIT and some of these other great big corporations have come in and have created that need. I'm going to start with a story. over this weekend, this Thanksgiving weekend, I was invited to visit a group of funders who wanted to fund our whole corporation here, our little teeny nonprofit corporation, I should say, to the tune of $100 million. That's a lot. But they wanted me to prove what I could do or not do. So in comes this guy, and they tell me to take his vocal print and tell me what's going on with him. And this comes from the esoteric and the scientific side and bringing the story together. So I said, well, I can tell by you just talking to me that you have a liver issue, and I can tell that it's genetic. Remember, all of this came originally from my hearing, and we just computerized it so all of you could use it, because not everybody has a mutated ear, and I'll explain that in a bit too. And Richard, I hope you bring in some questions about what is going on and how all of this started. So we jump on our Sound Health portal, and I look at it, and it pops the information, and it says choline, liver, that he's not processing choline very well, and it's really causing a problem with his liver. Well, that helps keep the liver clean, helps keep fatty acids down. So there it is, right on the screen. Well, we go on, and I say, well, here's secondary. You know, look at this, and this is why your cholesterol is this way. And he says, well, I have something else going on. Can you find that? And I said, why don't you just tell me what's going on? The report's already up there. We'll just look at it in the report. He said, well, I have psoriasis. I said, well, that was on the first page that we looked at. And sure enough, the third thing down, the first two were liver, and the third one was psoriasis. So he was pretty convinced that, one, I could hear it with my ears, and two, that we had it scientifically evaluated. So kids are playing out in the yard where we are, and one of them gets hurt. And I believe in opportunistic issues, so I said, come on, let's do your vocal print. And it ended up, she had gotten hit on the mid portion of her thigh, and I said, probably the vastus lateralis or medialis. And the computer said, no, it is the gemellus or something like that, which is a connective thing between her knee and her groin. We played the sound, took less than a minute, and she was not in pain anymore. This guy is convinced. But my question is, why did I have to convince him when we have years and years of study? We have proven that people with similar issues have similar vocal anomalies. Now, these corporations see the writing on the wall, Pfizer, MIT, Mayo Clinic, Sunday Health, PureTech, they've all taken up vocal profiling, and they're all claiming to be the beginner. And I'm just going to lay it all out there and show you where the beginning really came from. We are going to invite our audience to submit pertinent questions. I see a lot of you are still angry about flu stuff. So we will be monitoring both the chat that Richard has. Richard, how do they get to your chat?
They go to blogtalkradio.com/Sherry Edwards, and that will open up the main page for all of the shows. And you can see the live. There will be one of them will be lit up that says live show, and you just click on that, and you'll be able to log into the chat.
Okay, and for those of you on WebEx, you can go to the side, the bottom right side, and there's a chat there underneath everyone's name that is listening or watching the show. Richard, do you have any direction or questions before we start here?
No. I'm looking forward to hear it for going forward in this. This is always fun to hear the history.
I always thought you knew everything going on because we've been together so long, but there's still new things that pop
yep.
up even for you. So this began before I even have a memory of what's going on. I was raised in Appalachia, up in the hills on a Scrabble farm, you know, raised corn and whatever, had some pigs. And what you're looking at is the corn crib where I was raised. I was adopted by a very poor family. I was part of their relatives that didn't have a place to be. And this little square hole you see at the top here, you could stick your head out there. There was boards laying across the roof of this, or the top of it. And that's where we had mattresses and we slept, but that was the window. And in the winter, since this was a corn crib and had open slats on it, they took cardboard boxes and for the wind not to come in. It was a pretty uneducated backwood place to be. But the most wonderful thing about it is it had no electricity. There was no other sound whatsoever around anywhere. We had chickens and dogs and gardens and whatever. And I think because I didn't have anything extra to interfere with my hearing, that my hearing developed in a way that I was able to hear things that other people didn't, and I didn't know that was going on. So I'm going to talk about two different ways that this happened, esoterically and scientifically. And I really don't think it has much to do with me at all. I feel like it just had a life of its own, and I was along for the ride. Now, if we look at this esoterically, here I am out in this middle of nowhere at the 400-acre family farm at the bottom of a ravine by a creek, and very seldom were there even visitors. The road was dirt. The road's still dirt. I still live on the same road. But when I was 5, and remember, here I am, this oblivious person, no radio, no TV. Now, we did have a Sears catalog, but it was in the outhouse along with the corn cobs. But that was no magazines. That was my taste of outside of this little world, that Sears catalog that we were using for a purpose it was not supposed to be. And I'm 5 years old, and I'm doing things that I'm not supposed to be doing, like calling a chicken to me, and I'm just talking to it and sending out a signal to it. And the dog's the same, and people would cut themselves, and I'd just do a little hum, and the blood would stop. But I didn't know what I was doing. Now, you see this hill behind this corn crib? To the right of this, my cousin and I one day were walking along this big ridge, and we found this great big silver, metallic, round, tall thing. It must have been 3 times taller than me, so somewhere between 10 and 12 feet. And there's this dancing picture on the side of it. And I don't know what this is. I know now that it's a hologram. But this was 1956. 56? No, 1952. And the next thing I remember trying to walk toward this big silver object, and it was laying kind of against a hill, a little lump of dirt kind of hill where they kind of made a road. And the next thing I know, we're trying to walk down this hill, this path you can see in the back here. And every step we would take, we would boing up over the trees. And I thought, wow, what if this quits while we're up here? You know, that's a long way down. I mean, we were actually like these people walking on the moon, boinging up over the trees. But I had a hold of her hand, and this only worked when I had a hold of her hand. And we tried to go back and talk to our family about it. Oh, it's a weather balloon. They didn't believe it. They couldn't find it again. But from that moment on, that's when I really heard sounds from trees and carrots and I didn't understand it. I was in a total oblivious, walk-around zombie kind of world, because I would try to tell people about this and what was going on with my head and my ears and the music and the sounds, and nobody had any music here. I think somebody might have had an old banjo or something, but we didn't have a radio to listen to music. We hadn't gone to school yet. So I'm oblivious. And as time goes on, my eye color changes from blue to green to sort of yellow. My shoe size changes. Some days I'm allergic to this and can't eat berries and whatever. So when I grew up, I started searching to see what was going on. And I wrote to Ruth Montgomery, who had just written a book about strangers among us, about walk-ins. And I wrote to her a real simple thing through her publisher. And I said, is it possible that when a walk-in situation happens, the other guy doesn't vacate? Because there seemed like there was two of me all the time. And sometimes I could understand and hear what was going on with the other person, and they were very smart, and I was over here, and I felt really dumb. They knew how to read, and I didn't. It came to the point where they knew their multiplication tables, and I didn't. Am I a successful schizophrenic? Do I have a split personality? I don't know. But Ruth Montgomery wrote back within just a few days. I was really surprised. And she said, the psychologist, Sherry Edwards, when she was 6 years old, now I was five, and I was in psychology in school, which I quickly dropped out of, when she and her friends found the cigar-shaped cylinder in the woods, we'd never called it that, but that's exactly what it was. It had a rounded top like a cigar shape. She agreed to share her body, her life, for the unity of healing with sound. And I was flabbergasted, and I was scared. And I quickly dropped out of psychology because I had these ideas of little green man and do-do-do-do. I have since been tested, and I have an implant. Now, is this coming from other dimensional? Is it coming from outer space? Did it come in on this cigar-shaped cylinder? How did Ruth Montgomery know it? Ruth Montgomery was a reporter, I think, for the Washington Star Post under Eisenhower, and she decided to try to debunk automatic writing. And so she started trying it, and this guy named Fletcher came through and started writing her things that she ended up putting in books. I wanted an education. I wanted to understand what was happening to me, because there were times when I would get into a lot of trouble, and somebody would ask a question, and I'd answer it, and I didn't know how I answered it. And they were really afraid of me, because it was like at some point I was reading what they were thinking, but not why they are saying what they're saying. And guys, that makes it really hard to be around me. And it makes it hard on me, because if you lie to me, I may not catch you. Oh, not catch you. I may not confront you, but I'll just chalk it up over here. This person lies for this reason. How can I help them not lie? So it put a strange perspective on me. And when I did start to school, the other kids were kind of afraid, because I knew things, or I said things that just were beyond what I had learned. And I sort of went away for a few years, and I remember coming back when I was in the sixth grade. Coming back, we had these old wooden seats, and I remember taking one of those O.J. Simpson feet dive into the car. Remember that old commercial? And I was diving into this seat, and this person had this wool red checkered dress on that was so heavy I couldn't hardly stand it. But I didn't know where I was. I was looking at a page of was and were questions that you do in the sixth grade. and I asked the teacher a question, and all of a sudden I knew the answer from the teacher, but she still cracked me with some kind of ruler or something. But I remember that so clearly. I don't know where I was before I dove into that chair. I don't know where that space of time went. I do know that I was supposed to know things that I didn't. I was supposed to recognize people that I didn't. Again, was I off learning someplace? I was determined at that point to keep my mouth shut and learn everything I could about extrasensory perception, and there just wasn't anything. There was one book by Louisa Rhine about people who had extrasensory perception in some way, but she didn't know how it happened either. I figured out somewhat that it was these sounds that I was hearing. I was hearing sounds from people and carrots and animals and trees, and there was associations with it, but I couldn't tell anybody. There was nobody that could understand. And another thing that happened to me when I was 5 or 6 is I had a near-death drowning. And after that, the strength of hearing these sounds got so much more, louder, until it was hard to tune them out. So I spent a lot of time alone trying not to hear, not appreciating this gift, until it came a time when it was just really, really needed, and then I'd bring it out, and then people would be afraid of me again. I was determined that I was going to learn about parapsychology and intuition, and so there was this class at the university, and I was working there at the time because I couldn't afford to go to school. I had 2 kids already. Love them, but I was just stupid and young. And working my way, trying to go to school, trying to take care of kids, having a full-time job. And so here's this course about introduction to parapsychology. And it was by a science teacher, and I'm going to get the real stuff here. He taught the first 3 sessions, and I taught the rest, and then went on to teach it for 11 years at Ohio University. I could do the stuff, but I couldn't explain how it was done. It took me 12 years to get through my undergraduate degree, 1 course at a time, on my lunch hour. And during this time, I was going to interpersonal communication now, because Ruth Montgomery had written that book about little green men and walk-ins and asked me to be in the book, and I just totally refused. I just totally freaked out. So I was trying to figure out what these sounds were and keeping it all quiet until I was typing a paper on tinnitus, ringing in the ears. And I thought, I hear symphonies. I hear music. I hear conversations. You know, like you can look around and repeat what you just saw. There are times in my ears when I can repeat what I heard. It's just in there. I remember one time when I had a neck ache or something, and I was married to my present husband, Bill, and I said, could you rub my neck? It's really, really hurting. And I laid across the bed a short way, and he straddled my back and was massaging my neck. And I felt his neck turn and look at a book in the bookcase at the head of our bed. And I could read what he was reading through his eyes. I decided this has got to be something about communication. You get close to people and you can feel their anger or their hurt or what's going on with them. So I thought, this has to do with the ears. It has to do with what I'm hearing. It has to do with this tinnitus stuff that I was typing this paper about ringing in the ears. And all the time, I'm just totally oblivious to what's going on, but trying to figure it out quietly and on my own because there's nobody else around that can talk to me about it. So when I talked to the professor and said, you know, I think I'm really sick. I just hear all this stuff in my ears all the time. And he gave me something about Beethoven or somebody that heard symphonies and wrote them down. And that was kind of interesting, but it really didn't say anything. And the dean, Dr. Fusey, said, oh, Sherry, we love you. We know you're a little weird. Just don't talk about that stuff. So we decided to get my ears tested. And the guy who was testing my ears was studying samurai warriors and their fighting technique. He also was newly married. He also had high blood pressure, and he was on medication for high blood pressure. And in those days, 40 years ago, the blood pressure medication rendered some men impotent. So if they couldn't get an erection, they couldn't have sex, and they couldn't have babies, and they wanted to start a family. And he was testing my ears, and he came in this little soundproof room, and he said, Sherry, what are you hearing? Your hearing is off the scale. So I just did one of these sounds, and if I do it now, it would fill this room, and it would, if I'm listening to the room, it will tell me the dimensions of the room, because I can hear the sound of space. I can hear space, dimensions. And we've proven it again and again. And I think there's a connection, because frequency is dimension, frequency is time, frequency is emotion, frequency is hearing, frequency is sight, frequency is everything. And so I'm looking to find out what's going on with my hearing and what's happening with this guy who has high blood pressure. I was just so lucky. My life is so directed in where to go and what to do. And he said, what are you hearing? So I did one of these sounds, and he nearly dropped to his knees. He said, I think you have discovered the sounds that the samurai warriors did right before they attacked an opponent. And it was designed to render the other guy's blood pressure to drop it. And he said, I felt mine drop. I know what it feels like. Can you do a sound that can get me off this medication? I said, I don't know. Let's try, which is kind of my whole philosophy here. I don't know. Let's try. So we ended up looking at people's blood pressure with the School of Music, Hearing and Speech Science, School of Music and Interpersonal Communication. All four departments went together to do this project. And we were astounded at what happened. We could change blood pressure by as much as 30 points in opposing directions. In other words, we could kill people with sound. And I was working with a guy that had a music studio. And he said, I want to test what you're doing. And so we began testing and found out that the sounds I was making could also scramble iron oxide tapes. And he had somebody in Sandia in Albuquerque, so I got drug out there because they were really upset that I could scramble iron oxide tapes. The guy's name, I just remembered it, Louis Stevens. So I'm out there doing all of this research, and they want to know what's going on and what can I hear and what can I do, and I don't know. You know, let's just try and see what would happen. But if I could kill people with a frequency, the government was certainly interested in that. And if I could erase iron oxide tapes, those reel-to-reel tapes, I could scramble them. Boy, they had to do something else. So CDs came out just a little bit after that. But the government then decided that they were going to use my voice. They were going to see what was going on with my voice. So they set up some military statements, protocol, and they had me singing to vegetables to see if they would dehydrate. They did. They used the same sound and a laser and beamed it at the vegetables. They rotted. So they decided they were going to test my voice. So they put me in this little soundproof room, and they brought a guy in that was in a wheelchair, and I don't know if he had Parkinson's or MS or what, but I don't really know what's going on because they're not really telling me anything. They wheel this guy in, and I'm sitting on a rounded bench all the way around this little soundproof room. And the first thing this guy in a wheelchair did was reach over where I'm sitting, and I hate to be crass, but he grabbed my crotch. And I let out a yelp, and I thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this thing? I am so upset. And so I did a sound that would calm me down. And they said, okay, we got it. I never told them that it was my sound I was trying to do to calm me down because of this rude, crude guy. So they went on with some of their studies. They didn't get very far because what I was doing was contrary to what they thought I was doing. So here I am studying, trying to find out what these sounds are. And so I try to deal with music. I try to deal with auras. I try to deal with mind-to-mind communication. We set up all kinds of experiments. The professors didn't believe anything, any of the data we were getting. It was too good. They sent us back again and again. Dr. Meng Ji at the university was part of the people who were helping do this. So I decided that I'm going to call these things essential silent perceptors. Get that? ESP. Essential silent perceptors. Now, I was in the School of Communication, so that sounded good, like body language and whatever. So we wrote our first papers in the early 80s, and that's one of the things I'd like to share with you. When we did these studies about blood pressure, and we could control people's blood pressure, it says in the Duke Encyclopedia of New Medicine, bioacoustics as a therapeutic approach was developed by American Sherry Edwards, M.E.D., Masters of Education, in 1982 after she realized she could hear unusually. I don't know if the rest of this is down here. No, but you can go look at it. It's on page, I think, 552. But 1982, we published these first papers showing that we could look at someone's voice, or I could hear through the ears and hear what was going on and control somebody's blood pressure. Now, was that important? Might it be to the military, because if you could kill people, or to sports people and do a sound before an opponent, or to crowd control. We didn't know what it was. We didn't know what I was hearing until along comes Johns Hopkins University and proved that what I was hearing was what they're calling an otoacoustic emission, a sound coming out of your ears. But they had to wire you down, and they had this wire, and they was doing it on guinea pigs and animals, because it really wasn't fit for a human. It is now, because Berard and Tomatis both have taken up that task of creating earphones that can hear these sounds in your ears. You can hear the sounds, but you really can't tell what they are. And this otoacoustic emission, by ancient terms, is your signature sound. Now, in some of the ancient traditions, based on your age and your location, they give you a mantra, tell you not to tell anybody else, but it's all based on ages, and it's the same mantra for the same ages. I've read some about it, don't know everything. So they knew this in very esoteric times about sound and how sound could heal and how words could heal and how lullabies could heal. But we still didn't know how any of this worked. And people were more and more picking up what we were doing. This is a picture of the Alternative Medicine, the Definitive Guide. And it was done, boy, I can't remember the year this was done, earlier than the Duke Encyclopedia. But this was done by a congressman, and one of the editors was Larry Trivieri. And Larry Trivieri went on to write a book because he was so fascinated by what we did. He wrote a book about, that's not what I need, Health on the Edge. And we are an entire chapter, along with a lot of very famous people. I'm the only one in there that doesn't have a doctorate or an MD behind my name. But they were so fascinated by what I could do, what I could show. We couldn't explain it. We just knew that it worked and it had efficacy. Larry Trivieri later wrote a preface for one of our books saying that this was the most profound protocol he had seen in his life, and it was going to be the medicine of the future. But still, we're way back here with, we don't know how to tell people what this is and that they really need it. So we started to attach it to things like Star Trek medicine, because we do this in several stages. We evaluate your voice, then we put those frequencies that are stressed or anomalous into a little tone box and give it to you to entrain your brain. And it's much like the Star Trek tricorder that we can do and have your brain listen to it. And from there, the body begins to heal itself. I started searching. What is this? What's the commonality of voice, my ears, a spectrograph? And I was seeing this guy in Washington. He had emphysema, and they asked me to come in and help him die easier. Well, I listened to his sounds, and I was watching this little meter thing that we had, and I noticed at the same time that the sounds I was hearing was also the sounds that were in stress in this little thing called a cork. They had it, actually. It was a little piano tuner. And when I'd hear a sound, like the note of B on this little machine would kind of wobble and wiggle. So I gave him the note of B. He was able to get up out of his deathbed and walk to the bathroom, and then he could walk to his garage, and then he started working in his wood shop again. 11 years later, he's still alive. He uses that sound box, a bunch of frequencies, for about an hour a month, and that keeps emphysema, incurable emphysema, it keeps it at bay. What was going on? I gave him sound. Where is sound registered in the body? It's registered in your ears. It's registered on your skin. What was the commonality? It came back to frequency. And once we realized that out the mouth a frequency, in the ear as a frequency, there's all that age-old stuff about you can program yourself with your own words. But we begin to look at the body, the brain, as a central processing unit that controlled the frequencies. The frequencies that went on the neural network all over the body to make your finger crook or your toes curl or your liver do what it ought to do. How could we tap into that? It's my voice and my ears that's the ace in the hole. I could touch somebody's muscle and hear the frequency through my fingers and vocally do the frequency. The machine measured it. We put it in the tone box. It gave it back to the person, entrained their brain, and their body healed themselves. It wasn't what we were giving them. It was what their body was doing with the frequencies that were lost or too big or too little or whatever. Why does that happen? Well, we know it's dis-ease. When the voice is out of harmony, out of balance, that manifests as symptoms and disease. And if we can give you back full spectrum sound, just like your body needs full spectrum light, your body heals itself. How could we tap into that? So we got these great big Hewlett-Packard machines, and I started experimenting with what I was hearing with what was affecting the other person that we're giving the sound to. Because if I give you your exact sound, then I can't hear your sound anymore. That's how we're able to do this so quickly and be able to say, yes, that's exactly what's going on. That's the way I do comatose babies and rabbits that can't talk and whatever, although we've done a lot of animals and horses and whatever. And we found out that there is a time link to all of this. And even though I can see the frequencies from your voice, there's an extra piece in there, that timed link, that really causes the body to heal itself. And it's in a lot of the old literature, if you know how to pick it out and look at it. It's in the Templar literature. It's in the Templar architecture. It's in the Bible. It's in a lot of the old codes about harmonics. And that was what Pythagoras was talking about. The movements of the planets he thought were elliptical. And that's a Pythagorean scale. And I think that's how we're put together physically. But then Kepler came along and looked at the planets in an elliptical orbit instead of a round orbit. And that was much more like our biochemical processing. So by listening to people and doing the math, we figured out the formulas and how to give them back to people in this time sequence. And lo and behold, what we had really stumbled upon was the RNA, the proteins that keep the codes of the DNA. We've even been able to reverse Down syndrome in children and adults. But I had to listen to it first. We didn't have anything that we could use. Now we've taken everything that my ears do and we've put it in computer programs and evaluations and research programs that we are sharing with you, our audience, so you can do what my ears do. I don't want this to die when I die. And I don't know really what to say about that. I'll help on the other side, or somebody else will pick it up, or maybe I'll get it all written down beforehand. But we want to lay claim now that we were first in the modern times. Now, we're not first in the ancient times, and Jill Madsen has written a book about that called The Lost Waves of Time. It's the incredible esoteric explanation of what is going on with self-healing. And we've written an article for you to tap into your own self-healing. And it's on our site under soundhealthoptions.com under Reaching Theta and Programming Yourself Through Your Own Sound Currents. And we teach you easily. There's no special big thing about it. We don't have to create an entire religion around it. It's an easy, simple thing. Our rose-colored wish for the world. We want all of you to have this information. And I want to lay claim. The foundation comes from the mutation of my ears. And even though lots of big corporations are picking it up, and they're going to try to claim it. They've already tried to copyright some of it. I'm keeping it clear and clean and open and free for the people. And that's what these next three sessions are going to be about. What's the basis of it? How does it happen? How do you do it? How can you become part of the healing group for the planet? Marcy says, can any of your kids do this? My son can pick out the sound that goes with that person if I do it. I have a granddaughter that can duplicate the sounds and have perfect pitch, but she can't tell who it belongs to or where she's hearing it from. So we're keeping track on who can do this. And we're trying to keep it free of government, free of big pharma, because there's a lot of things that we can do. We can teach people to do this on their own by them listening to their own sounds. If we could teach people to do that, they wouldn't need any of the computers that I'm doing. But Marcy, thank you for your questions. But think about what kind of world would we create if nobody ever died? Is there going to be some voluntary walk into the next dimension where we don't have a corporeal body? I've had a couple of near-death experiences. I know there's other dimensions. And I know how to change my frequencies so I can drop into those other dimensions. That's how I ended up with a 4-point in school. Anytime I wanted to know an answer, I just asked the universe. That was kind of a cheat. But the information's out there if we can tap into it. And we want to, much more than tap into just health, we want to teach you to tap into all universes. It's a lot to take in. It's a lot to understand. And it's very hard to live in this world, this reality, where people don't understand the concepts of frequency and biofields, and that we are all part of one biofield, even though we have our own individual biofield. It's like our finger has a biofield by itself, but it's also part of this hand and part of this body. It's a whole different concept of living and being in which greed has no place. So we'll be bringing you more of this and how to live in this world of alternative dimensions. I can't believe we are out of time. I tried to
jump
answer
that. You've answered a lot of questions. It's always, another little pieces that fall into place in my 4 or 5 years of working with Sherry. I've heard this story, and it's always amazing. And I'm looking forward to the next pieces because it really is, you know, what you're wanting to create and what you're doing, for example, with the Sound Health Portal, is really opening it up. I'm very excited by the Sound Health Portal because it no longer requires being on a specific platform. It requires having a computer with a browser. And that's very exciting. It really opens it up. So it's a great story.
We'll talk about more about this in the next Direction for Truth 2 weeks from today. But people have asked some questions about harmonics and which scales do we use, and we'll answer all of that because there really is not one scale. Everybody has their own. And that's how we become separated. So we'll talk about that at length next time. Thank you so much for listening. Go ahead.
I was going to say that if you want to listen to this again now or in a few minutes, right after we click end in the next minute or so, it'll be about 10 to 15 minutes, and you'll be able to go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archive player, and you'll be able to hear the last 5 shows there, and the show will be there, like I say, about maybe 10, 15 minutes right after we end the show here. And then you can also go out into the currently net neutral universe and go to iTunes or Pocket Cast or Podcatcher or Dogcatcher, any of the podcast aggregators you like, and search for Sherry Edwards, and you'll be able to find the 550 or 60 shows we have now out there. And I recommend subscribing, especially this 3-part series is going to be a blast to listen to. Any other closing thoughts, Sherry?
That there's nothing really wrong with your voice. It's what you do about it that makes a difference. And I think I very much fit my name. I am a Sherry. And
boy, howdy.
This series is to share all of this with you so you can establish a foundation of self-health. I will try to render this video and get it up as soon as possible on our site. Thank you for being here. Richard,
thanks,
I don't
everybody.
Think I've ever heard you so quiet.
No, it's a good story. I can sit around the fire and listen to a good story. We need s'mores next time, maybe. All right, everybody. Have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Sunday. Bye-bye.
Later.